Welcome to the Routing Table Podcast. My name is Melchior and I'm here with my co-host Rick. Hey Rick.
Hey Melchior.
Our guest today is Tony Prisenda, distinguished engineer at Juniper Networks. Welcome Tony.
Hello, hello.
Tony has been on the show before where we discussed all about the new routing protocol Rift. But for those who do not know you, Tony, could you quickly introduce yourself?
Well, I made a career out of routing since early 90s, so quite a time, and it never got boring. You know, so in Juniper, I'm working on mostly, you know, advanced forward-looking routing features, anything between coding stuff and coming up with crazy ideas, and some of them are actually going into real networks and working, you know.
One of the latest innovations you worked on is Rift, obviously. As I mentioned, we extensively talked about that in another episode. Today, we want to discuss another new edition. It ties into Rift, it ties into EVPN, and the draft is called AutoEVPN. Tony, what is AutoEVPN? It sounds to me as if everything goes automatically. But what is it? What are we discussing?
Well, it's a solution to a customer problem we're seeing, right? Because otherwise it's nothing. So the idea is not necessarily tied to Rift, but Rift has a lot of properties which makes it very easy to execute AutoEVPN. That's, you know, why we're pushing this direction first. The idea is, you know, dramatically simple. What we're seeing as EVPN, you know, customer, in terms of customer interaction, is that the you know, configuration is fairly complicated. Even a basic config, preconditions, a lot of, you know, underlay configuration, BGP configuration, and then EVPN. And you have to understand the concepts and how the stuff all plays together. And there are subtle differences between platforms, as they always are, because EVPN is quite silicon intensive. So each variant of silicon, you know, has its own grooming needs. So when we look at the way people deploy EVPN, especially in our service providers, and, you know, also a good amount of enterprises, we realize that people actually stick to relatively simple prevalent model. And then the next thing was, you know, can we configure something like that automatically, you know, without any customer interaction or, you know, user interaction. And when we started to look at the details, we figured out that actually, yes, what we can do is after the switches are, you know, put together and everybody's running EVPN, you know, on an IP fabric, of course, or, you know, almost, of course. So
let's assume everyone does.
I would be hard pressed to think where people are running EVPN, which is not an IP fabric. When you stitch fabrics, right, and stretch VLANs and so on, but basic EVPN on a fabric, well, it's pretty much, you know, EVPN over VXLAN over IP. I mean, there's other stuff, but VXLAN is very popular, and ISR over UDP, this kind of stuff. So anyway, what we realized is that. We can actually provision underlay with Rift, right? So that's why Rift is pretty nice, because otherwise the underlay is, you know, it's its own thing already that you would have to figure out. And once you have the underlay, you have enough information that we can actually provision a full EVPN solution, you know, ERP model, without any customer interaction whatsoever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. So it's a technology where that basically allows you to buy a bunch of switches and plug the cables in and boot them up. And what you get is a fully EVPN configured.
It sounds as if you're extending some of the, let's say, unique features of Rift, for example, the zero-touch provisioning, and you're now extending that into provisioning your, at least the baseline of your overlay, and in this case, EVPN.
Well, so actually, Rift doesn't even need extensions, except basically communicating that it's running AutoEVPN.
I mean the concept of automatically provisioning. Let's say the bare minimum of what you need.
Yes. So in case of AutoEVPN, you literally don't need anything. If you're running a single fabric and you're perfectly happy with the amount of MacVerse and VLANs that you get, and you don't need to do anything. You just enable it, and that's it. But why I'm saying I'm not necessarily Rift needs any extension, because we figured out that actually we don't have to communicate much. Pretty much all the nodes can independently, based on the topology information, figure out what they are and derive all the necessary values, which sounds like a little bit like magic, but don't forget that with Rift, you actually get a lot of topology information that other protocols don't give you, right? So we know what is the top of the fabric, we know the direction, we understand who are the leaves. So that pretty much determines what we call roles, right? Each node, based on where is it in the topology and what it sees other people do in the topology, can basically figure out what role it has. Am I a leaf and I'm the top of the fabric? You know, am I just a spine in between? Do I have north bound neighbors, right? Plays a big role. Do I have any south, southbound neighbors and so on? And based on this information, you can actually figure out the role. And once you figure out the role, you basically compute all the necessary variables, of which there are pages, you know, all kind of loopbacks and clusters and, you know, route distinguishers and targets and whatever, you know, there's like a pretty significant zoo of things, couple of pages just of variables to bring up an EVPN in a sense. And then, frankly speaking, it just goes into template per product. And the template generates, you know, an ephemeral Junos config, and that's what it is.
So if you, indeed, like you're saying, so a Rift node always knows its place in the network, of course, and that's, of course, based its the type of EVPN configuration that you need to apply to start enabling that. Right. So it's just basically a flag that you signal through the network saying, all right, guys, spin up EVPN and go for it. And then that triggers, let's say, the templates, fills in the variables, and pushes that into the config.
Yep. And actually, every node does it independently, right? and then the more advanced discussion becomes like, what if some nodes are not auto EVPN, and how do I know that everybody, you know, does the right thing and so on? But that's, you know, the next iteration of the problem. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I see a second thing, because of course this is, I mean, we're now, you're working on this, of course, in a sense for Junos configuration, but do you see like a future for this being multi-vendor as well?
Well, that's why we put the draft out, no?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you can generate any config that you want out of that, right? Basically, what we standardize is, again, a model, ideal, right? And the ideal basically tells you, well, actually, we don't even standardize the ideal, necessarily speaking. We provide an ideal, but you don't have to use it. But what we're standardizing is the way you are deriving all those variables. Because... So I give you a simple example, right? We have route reflectors, because the whole thing is IBGP. You could make it work EBGP, but for a bunch of reasons, we went the IBGP model first. I mean, I don't want to go into discussion. Is EBGP, EVP better?
That's not their religion.
Right, that's endless, right? I think there are pluses and minuses both ways. But, you know, we have an architect for EVPN, and she preferred IBGP. So we went to IBGP model. So IBGP model, what we do is at the top of the fabric, where our two or three guys are, well, guys or women. Well, I don't think Rift nodes have, you know, a gender. So a couple of Rift nodes at the top of the fabric, basically determined based on some simple distributed election. Like we do lots of stuff in Rift that they are become routed. So now, so fine, but how do people know what are the route reflectors, right? And how do I do a multi-vendor? I stick a couple of Rift nodes and they will agree who is actually the route reflector and who is not, right? So you need to standardize the algorithm first. And then once you've chosen that, you have to derive a route reflector loopback, because all the leaves want the loopbacks, right? So the derivation of the loopback has to be standardized. Right. Now you can put it in ideal because it makes it simple. Like, okay, here is a abstract way to think about the objects and the relationships to them, right? And that's basically an ideal. But at the end, it's like, well, just make sure that you have all the variables in place and you derive the variables the same way that the whole network does, and then everything will work. So, you know, it's absolutely thinkable it will be multi-vendor. The fact that at the end generates a Junos config is kind of a... arbitrary artifact, which has to do with our products. But yeah, so that's why we're pushing the stuff in ITF. I would, you know, very much like people allowing, you know, customers choice.
So allowing choices is indeed great, I think. What is the what would you say the use case in terms of scaling would be for such an auto EVPN feature? I mean, I can imagine we can come up with like a pretty fixed set of variables that are always the same for any size of network, but I can imagine that there's like a certain use case for people who are like, all right, I would just want to throw together a couple switches and get my data center network up and running. What's your ideal customer for this?
Well, so technologically speaking, it's unlimited, right? I mean, Rift will scale. I mean, we have it running at pretty serious scale. I mean, we're running out of how far we can scale it compared to what the protocol can bear. So the solution per se would go at any scale. But what starts to play a role is that the bigger fabric you build, the more specialized your needs are, I assume, right? And with that, you basically want to tinker, right? You want some asymmetric stuff, or you don't like the way the stuff auto-provisions something and so on. So you want to fiddle with it. And the moment you start to massively fiddle with it, well, that's not the point of something like auto-EVPN, right? This is not singing, dancing unicorn, right? This is something that brings the stuff up, and you have a pretty much a cookie cutter practical configuration in place. But if you want to do weird stuff, then this is not, the batteries are not included. So at a certain point in time, you probably say, well, this auto derivation stuff is not flexible enough for me, and you want something more flexible. The second thing that starts to play at a certain point in time, auto EVPN, what we also standardize in are fairly simple analytics, right? So you strip the switches together, you can go to the top of the fabric, and with one look, you can basically see what state is you hold, not only, the underlay, but also the overlay. All the BGP sessions up, how many MACs are on each leaf, and so on, right? But, the bigger the fabric grows, the more complex will be your analytics, needs, right? And visualization needs, and so on. And none of the stuff is included. So I assume that there is a natural boundary at which point in time people want more complex tools to, configure this EVPN in, particular ways that serve their needs. And also they want, more visualization, more state, maybe real time, data path analytics, this kind of stuff. And then I think that the most natural transition is from something like this, which we can consider an entry-level product, so to speak, right? Maximum ease of use, nothing too crazy big. You get a cookie cutter, which serves, 80% of use cases for most people. But, once your needs grow bigger, I think something like Apstra becomes a natural choice, right? Yes, you need a controller, and, you need to learn significantly more about how EVPN works. I mean, with auto EVPN, you literally don't even have to understand the terminology. If you know what the VLAN is, you're pretty much done. So there will be somehow a transition boundary. Now, where it is, hard for me to tell. The technology scales. Now, how far do people want to scale it practically, operationally speaking? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're touching exactly on the right point here, is that as long as it's generic, I can assume, going back to the templates you mentioned, that you provision in the template a certain set of VLANs and MAC VRF, etc., but that is generic for the whole fabric. But as soon as you need connectivity between, let's say, two hosts or two VMs, then you would need a controller or something to, let's say, customize that setup, right?
Well, in a sense, depends where your EVPN starts, right? If your EVPN starts on the host, then we can extend the auto EVPN all the way to the host. But don't forget that basically the service access point of EVPN is a VLAN. So, you get a pipe and it's a VLAN. And then how you hook up these things into these VLANs and how they find each other, that's in a sense something between a service provisioning and an L2 problem, right? You can just happily broadcast or whatever it is on L2, or you can have something smarter.
Extending to the host, I think that is a really interesting maybe next step for the draft and for AutoVPN. It is something that is by nature in Rift, obviously, extending the underlay to the host. But I think, and thinking in these lines of auto EVPN draft, if your fabric is IPv6 by nature and it uses neighbor discovery, etc., then obviously the next logic step would be that you might not even need an addressing plan in that sense anymore if the host participates in auto EVPN as well, right?
Well, so there's multiple layers of that. If we talk about underlay, yes, sure. I mean, we have Rift on something like CRPD. It works just fine, right? Once you start to stretch auto EVPN to the host, you start to run in a bunch of other interesting things like supporting the, you know, the data plane on the host of auto EVPN, which is a non-trivial thing to do, right? And you also need to do good amount of stuff around tunneling, right? So something like VXLAN tunneling on Linux is, you know, that's something we also helped upstream and it's being worked on, right? I mean, EVPN preconditions is overlay a couple of interesting things, right? But once you have that, then yeah, you can stretch the overlay all the way to the host, and there is no particular magic for Rift or the auto EVPN that is necessary there. I mean, in a sense, for Rift, a server is a switch, if you want. There is no really no differentiation except, you know, the leaves don't forward. The Rift will never put you in the situation where the, you know, where the leaf or you know, you will start forwarding because, you know, it's valley free, right? So once the packet goes north, it only goes south. It never starts to zigzag. So that's kind of neat if you start to think about extending, you know, the overlay all the way down to the server because that's what you naturally need. But otherwise, there's no particular magic, right? The magic is rather, well, pluses and minuses, right? EVPN, and that's also why it's popular, is liked because it allows you to multi-home servers. And that's a nice thing. So Rift also allows you to multi-home servers, right, in IP, in L3. So in a sense, like, who cares? But the problem is that all the traditional routing solutions don't. Well, they can give you a default route, but it's all fun and games until links fail and you start to black hole.
Right.
So there is no multi-homing solution in IP for servers today, you know, in the true sense of the word. But EVPN gives you MCLAC, right? And a non-proprietary MCLAC. So that's a really nice thing, right? MCLAC was always around, but it was always proprietary. And the ESI stuff on EVPN allows you to multi-home servers in L2. You know, in a non-proprietary way. So here you are, right? But once you pull Rift all the way down to the server and Rift allows you to multi-home in IP, there is no reason to run multi-homing in EVPN. You are basically an endpoint of, you know, EVPN endpoint, and underneath you just run the tunnels, and the tunnels are multi-home because of IP. And multi-homing in L2 has its own set of challenges. It's significantly more complicated as technology than IP. If you look at all the DF elections and all kind of protocols that adding to DF to prevent, you know, replication and so on, right? Because the problem is, of course, the broadcast replication, right? You need designated. You have to know when you're multi-homing who is forwarding the broadcast. And this thing is a fairly complicated technology compared to multi-homing in IP, where basically the tunnel is you know, does entropy between the two IP trunks, and if some routing fails, then you know, the tunnel just falls over on the correct, you know, routing-wise on the correct interface. So lots of aspects, both is viable. What pulling the overlay down to the server, and I think that will be a biggie, right, buys you as well. And I think, you know, a large part of the reluctance to do that, or, you know, it's going slow, there are actually two parts, I think. First, there's no technology except really Rift to multi-home the stuff in IP properly. But the second one is that you have to run routing on the server. And that's a mildly scary thing, especially for the server folks, right? But once this you go over this hurdle, you solve one very significant problem, and that's the security air gap. Because think, what you have between the server and the switch, nothing security-wise. You just pump in L2. Right, so once you pull you know, the overlay all the way down to the server, we're not only talking multi-homing, right? We also talking security air gap between the server and the switch that you have today. which if you look at EVPN, is basically L2. So what you do with L2, it's all in the clear. You'd have to encrypt the traffic, I don't know, at application level, or otherwise you would have to encrypt it. Well, the VXLAN starts on the switch, so that doesn't help you. So you're basically left with MACsec, which is actually, first, an expensive technology because of the licensing, and second, is not meant for large-scale security models, I would say, because does not allow you easily to roll over keys, right? So once you stretch the overlay all the way down to the server, right, you are in all IP. And then, you know, you have routing security. On top of routing security, you can talk things like, for example, encrypting VXLAN tunnels or run IPsec tunnels or whatever for EVPN. I think once people start to realize that with something like Rift, you can very well pull in servers cheaply into the fabric, including overlay. If you use something like CRPD, where we have, you know, EVPN, then radically different, in a sense, simpler architectures become possible for data centers with EVPN overlay than are being done today.
No, I'm just thinking out loud here. So you're saying that you can just, let's say, if I take it to like a practical discussion with that company with a bunch of servers, a couple of racks, I can first, let's say, start connecting my more legacy environment with a couple of hypervisors that are dual homed with layer 2 to the network. And of course, that still has to be done manually, right? That those port configurations, that's not something the AutoVPN feature would detect, right?
Well, the AutoVPN... So it's interesting discussion, right? Because all of a sudden you are with the switch, which has maybe a couple of servers which are already, you know, extended with the overlay, and a couple of servers which are L2. AutoVPN deals with that. So we basically detect what is a C interface. I mean, nothing sophisticated. You just look at inactivity, right? I mean, there is no Rift on it. After a while, you say, well, it's probably a CE. If there's no activity, after a while, go, oh, well, let's try Rift again. You know, just basic auto-detection. But AutoEVPN will allow you very well to have a switch where a couple of servers are already running Rift and AutoEVPN. So you say, okay, those guys look like they extend the overlay, and the other guys, I have to basically give a CE L2 trunk, right, with VLANs. Yes, AutoEVPN will do that for you.
Okay, that's actually very cool, because that's really making my life a lot easier, I think, if I'm like this data center administrator there. And then, especially with EVPN, we all know that it can be quite a thing to configure if you're not used to running BGP on your data center and all kinds of different knobs that you need to get perfect to have the right situation. So I think that's actually very cool to be able to bring EVPN closer into the server while not having to deal with all this difficult configuration, right? And all the knobs and the variables that I need to know for. So in what sense would you say run that migration scenario? Let's say I have a big topology with all kinds of hypervisors, and then I can just seamlessly start connecting other Rift nodes that are running on the server and just start advertising stuff in EVPN, right? Is it simple as that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You basically cut over the servers. All of a sudden, they talk Rift, and that's it. There's no further magic. I mean, the only magic there is, but now I'm talking like very, you know, detailed spec things. So the server has to be set to a leaf, right, in Rift. So it never tries to like become a switch in the topology, because then the node above it can know that I have a mix of CE trunks and these guys that are leaves, and they're probably servers, and they're extending the overlay. But that's a detail, right? And you want to put that the server on as leaf anyway, so it doesn't somehow get the crazy idea that it's actually a switch, you know, forwarding traffic between things, right? So it's a good thing anyway, and most people will do it naturally. And actually, I mean, there's a bigger subtlety in Rift. We don't implement this stuff right now, but Rift is written the spec in a way that the server implementation is first massively simpler, and second can come up, you know, hard coded as a leaf without any configuration whatsoever. So you go, so that's ETP, no configuration, nothing new. Well, the new angle here is that on the server, you are, of course, far more concerned about attack surfaces. and any daemon, anything you're running that has a configuration is an attack surface. So running, you know, whatever, native Rift daemon, now with auto EVPN, we'll probably run CRPD without any configuration that always gets stuck as a server, as a leaf, and possibly with a hard-coded key already for routing security, significantly lowers your attack surface routing-wise, right? So that's a nice thing. It's a desirable thing.
Tony, small sidestep maybe. You mentioned it doesn't per se need Rift. How do you foresee this working in, let's say, a fabric I've already running? Let's say a typical fabric running BGP in the underlay. Are you looking to tailor it to that use case? Or because you mentioned it doesn't need Rift per se.
Well, I mean, this is probably mostly how big is the check driven discussion, right? Because, I mean, Rift is, there is no magic in Rift. You could make any protocol behave like Rift, but except the acronym, you know, you wouldn't be left with anything in terms of compatibility to what this thing was previously. But nothing prevents you from taking BGP, putting it, you know, on an operating table and start to do a brain and open heart surgery at the same time. And at the end, when it comes out the other side, you will get all the properties that you need to make something like auto EVPN work. Now, what you'll be left with is most likely just something that feels very comfortable to people because it pushes things in BGP format around, you know, some archaic, you know, binary format over the wire. But if you look at, is it compatible with normal BGP? By no means, right? Does it have a lot of knobs and warts grown all over it? Yes, of course it does. I mean, just look what auto peering does to BGP, right? BGP was architecturally from day one designed to prevent people from auto peering because it was considered a very evil thing if you do BGP peering, right? So now, you know, precondition for the technologies like that, that this thing is basically becoming a link state protocol. And, you know, you start with LSVR and then you put it on the operating table and at the end, you know, I don't know what comes out of it. The salient point being that it has nothing to do whatsoever with BGP except the acronym. And if you, you know, if you really hard, even the same port, right?
But in the end, it's always, we just stuck it in BGP, right?
Right. I mean, historically. No, these fashions come and go. These fashions come and go, right? So, yes, I mean, a peak turbine in our fuel, jet fuel, time resources, and those are just protocols. You can tailor them to, you know, behavior that you like. Will it be elegant? Will it be easy? None of the above, but of course it's doable, right? So will it have any advantage? No. It's largely a perception thing. If people think that anything that formats things like BGP is good and everything else is evil, then I guess we'll format everything to look like BGP, maybe even DNS queries at the end, you know? I'm only mildly, you know, sardonic.
Interesting. So, Tony, in the the discussion we had a little bit before we started recording, you mentioned something about analytics that you have that you can see from this, right?
Yeah.
Can you discuss what that is?
So Rift, you know, because when we looked at a bunch of interesting use cases in data center, what people need of IP fabric is Rift has built in a key value store. I mean, nothing where you can run, you know, throw out Redis out your servers and use Rift. But it's adequate for this kind of purposes. So basically what we're pushing in the key value store through the fabric once the auto VPN comes up. And again, we're standardizing the schema of this analytics element, so it will all interrupt. We're basically pushing basic analytics like, you know, things of interest. How many BGP sessions do you have up on this node? Because it's like the first indication of sanity, right? If I configured, let's say, 3 route reflector sessions and only one came up, it means stuff is working, but something is not well, right? Or, you know, if I have an... So what is... I mean, the peers is a classical thing. The other, how many type 2 MACs do you have, right? So that's kind of elegant because you look at the top of the fabric and you see your whole fabric, everybody running auto EVPN. And maybe somebody went crazy and pushed a million MACs into EVPN. Normal stuff, don't forget it. it's data plane driven, right? It's really easy to abuse, or you know, bug implementation or whatever, and then the thing starts to choke, and those things are not easy to figure out, because imagine, I mean, you go and look at your EVPN ripping. It's a huge thing, you know, tons of route targets, route distinguishers, go figure, right? Who is doing the mess? And on top of that, through the route reflector, you know, whereas here with one simple look, you see, you know, how many type 2 MACs you have, you know, type 2 IP MACs, stuff like that. What are the BGP IDs, loopback, so you can easily get to those things. What we're pushing is another thing that is very helpful, like what was the last change on EVPN, you know, in terms of control plane state. So if you have, for example, flaps, you can just look at, you know, at one place and you pretty soon see that something is flapping, you know, something is pushing a lot of data and not converging. You know, that's not extremely sexy, but very practical.
For sure.
You know, it's a poor man's controller, if you want, right?
Yeah. Well, at least it's
poor man's ASCII controller.
Yeah, at least it takes you back to the old Ethernet days, right? Like you just said, it's you take it out of the box and it works, right? So it's cool.
Right. I mean, and don't forget, I mean, this type of analytics, all of that stuff is because, you know, it's Junos, it's fully embedded into NetConf. So it's very easy to, you know, grab those things, right? It all acts out and all very easily accessible. So you can write, you know, your small script just looking whether something, you know, whether some red lights are blinking and react to it.
Exactly. So Tony, when can people start playing around with this and how can they access it?
So we have images of the whole thing, you know, the whole thing is going into productization. More than happy to provide engineering images on VMX. I mean, simplest platform to run things, you know, widely available. CRPD, the discussion is more, you know, EVPN discussion in your Linux kernel, because like we talked about the data plane and the tunneling and so on. So it's really, the simplest is really get VMXs and, you know, hook up a couple of servers or hook up a couple of VMXs as servers. That's how we run it. And the stuff is, of course, in productization on QFXs and so on. But there we're talking, you know, the whole testing, documentation, and so on. All the stuff to really make an official product. But, yeah, we're more than happy to engage with early engineering images and get input from people and get them to play with it and tell us, you know, what they like, dislike, what they want. Yeah.
Excellent.
And I, you know, if you'd like to push the draft forward, more than happy, right? That's still fairly early. I mean, we have the stuff kind of figured out, implemented, but, you know, there's the whole idea thing going through, making the stuff presented in a form that other people can also implement it and everything will interop. And that's also, you know, a job in itself.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So, all excellent, but Tony, I think we definitely sparked some interest in at some people. So, what's the best way that people can reach you for this?
PRZ Papa Romeo Zulu at juniper.net. You know, I'm swamped with email, but it's kind of, you know, you get a good chance over official channel to reach me.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Tony. I think this was a very great update on the workings of Rift and new things that are coming out. So thanks again for joining us. And if there's any news on Rift, let us know. And we'll be sure to cover that as well.
Yeah, most activity at this point in time is around, you know, getting finally the RFC shipped out. You know, it's 170 pages and growing and endless amount of reviewers and a lot, you know, of editorial stuff and so on. The protocol pretty much cooked, debugged, implemented, lapped, but, you know, it needs an RFC number. So that game is going on.
We'll be sure to celebrate the RFC.
Anybody will help with that. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, I know. It's been a while, yes. But, you know, that's IT of these days. Plus, I mean, let's not underestimate it. It's a complex spec, and we have very thorough reviewers, you know, which ultimately is for the better. But, yeah, you know, lots of T's needs to be dotted and I's crossed and whatever not.
Exactly. Well, again, thanks, Tony, so much for joining us. Next time, we'll be sure to celebrate that RFC number. And thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Now here. Bye-bye.
thank you as a listener for joining us for this latest episode of the Routing Table podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, visit our website, routingtable.cloud. Be sure to check out our merch, because we still sell that on our website. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.